This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
Final seconds. It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
From the Quicken Loan Studios in Houston, Texas. Quicken Loans. Take advantage of historic low rates. Go to Rocket Mortgage today. Here's your host, 6'1", former Oklahoma Sooner basketball player, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. We are in full pads tonight. We're ready to get after it. That's because it is time to kick off our next segment. We're going to do a full recap of the Sugar Bowl. Oklahoma, the big win over the Auburn Tigers, who met for the first time since 1972. That is hard to believe, the 1972 Sugar Bowl. Thrilled to have back with us the senior writer with OU Insider, and that is James Hale. And I am so happy to report we had the opportunity to catch up over the holiday break and enjoyed a lovely late lunch at one of my all-time favorite places, and that is O'Connell's in Norman, Oklahoma. Happy New Year, James.
Well, Happy New Year, Ian. You obviously made O'Connell's a better place when you were there. Everybody felt a lot prettier and a lot better, and it was great to meet your son, who's going to be the next PGA star. And it was really great to get together with you guys. What's funny about that 1972 game, I didn't cover that game, but really? I watched that game on television. That shows you how old I am. But that was a great game with Jack Mildren, and that team of that year I thought was as good as anybody in the country. They had Greg Pruitt on it, and a lot of great players set the stage for what rolled through 73-75 with the great Barry Switzer. And, that really set the precedent for what Oklahoma was going to do in the future.
Okay, so James, you were in New Orleans with the Sooners' big takedown against Auburn to win the Sugar Bowl. What were your takeaways from this very dominating win, 35-19?
Well, it's just what the doctor ordered for this program. This season has been a tough one. It's been a season where people have talked about different things besides football. You know, it's been the Joe Mixon video and why is Mixon playing? Mm-hmm. And, you know, guys quitting the football team out of nowhere. And, you know, a weird game against Ohio State early when one position gives up, you know, four touchdowns. And, you know, it's just weird things that happen. They flop in the opener against Houston. And a Houston team that was good but certainly wasn't great. And there's no reason why OU shouldn't have gone in there and not played better. They didn't play well, and Houston did. Now, why is Houston playing better than OU on that day? So, you know, this was a weird year, a difficult year, I think, for Coach Stoops and his staff to have to deal with some of the issues that they did. Yet here they are at the end, playing their best football, winning a Big 12 championship, and then beating a good, solid Auburn team pretty handily in the Sugar Bowl. And I think that's a testament to how much OU grew this year, how well the coaching staff worked with this group, and how good of a job Coach Stoops did in leading this team. And, you know, this team to accomplish, to re-establish their goals after their 1-2 start. Baker Mayfield told us, he said, our new goals are to win the Big 12 championship and to get into the Sugar Bowl and go win the Sugar Bowl. Well, mission accomplished, and, you know, so they're in a pretty good spot heading into next season.
Okay, the senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale, is back with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And talking about the Oklahoma Sooners, they won 10 consecutive games. They finished their season 11-2. You had just mentioned that Big 12 Conference Championship. So where does this win with the Sugar Bowl, where does this rank over some of the wins over the past 5 years for this program?
I don't know if it's necessarily bigger than the win over Alabama when they were in the Sugar Bowl before this with Trevor Knight doing what he did. Oklahoma was a double-digit underdog in that game. And when Oklahoma upset a really talented Alabama team that day, it showed that Oklahoma was still relevant in college football. I think people felt Oklahoma was relative this time in college football and still a major power. Heck, before the year started, they were ranked, what, in the top two or three in the country. So everybody thought that this was really a good football team that just wasn't playing up to its potential. But they had rolled through the Big 12 to reestablish themselves, you know, as a really good team. So, but it's a big win because the SEC and the Big 12 have this sparring match going on that mm-hmm. the SEC is more physical. And, you know, Bob Stoops has always kind of gone after the SEC saying, hey, they've got their good teams just like we do, but, you know, they've got their teams that are just pretty good just like we do, and they've got their teams that aren't so good just like we do, and they're not any different than anybody else, and that upsets the SEC all the time that Bob goes after them. Even after this game, when Bob was asked about being the more physical team, he's going, yeah, most of the time we are. He goes, you guys create this deal that, you know, we're not a physical football team, and heck, what, we're not going to be as physical as Auburn? Because that's a joke. Come on, we're going to be as physical as Auburn. And so this back and forth kind of goes between, you know, Bob and the SEC, but Bob's been proven right more often than not when it comes to the SEC. So, you know, maybe over the last 5 years, the two biggest victories have been over Alabama and Auburn, even though there's been some other big victories throughout the year. I mean, the wins over Oklahoma State have been very big in terms of winning the conference championships and things like that.
Okay, the senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale, with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show, is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. One of the questions we've definitely got to ask, we want you to get into, is how do you think Oklahoma handled Joe Mixon's situation and the off-field issues? Because the video, it was very disturbing to watch.
Sure it is, and it was, you know, that was a wrong thing that Joe did. There's no doubt about that. And that's not what OU's saying. You know, OU knows it was a terrible thing that Joe did. What OU is telling you is that they don't think what Joe did there really defines who Joe is. He made a mistake. He buckled under a situation he shouldn't have buckled in, and they punished him by suspending him for a year. And I think the penalty has proven to be a good penalty because of the way Joe has handled it moving forward. Joe's been a model student athlete. He had the one flare-up with a parking ticket at OU, and all of us that have been at OU and live in Norman, we get angry at parking attendants. They seem to just write tickets all the time. Just, you know, even if you're not doing anything wrong, you seem to get one. Most of us that live in Norman kind of understand that, but because he's Joe Mixon, he got suspended for a game. You know what? He understood that. He didn't complain about it. He didn't fight it. He just said, okay, coach, and then rooted his guys on from his apartment where he lives. And, you know, he's been a good student. He's one of the most popular guys on the team. He's called the Energizer Bunny on the team. And he really brings a lot to the table to what this football team does. And they really like having him on the football team. So I think the way OU handled it, when the video came out, see, OU didn't have any control over the video coming out. That was left to his legal team and fighting the legal, you know, the media and everybody else. That wasn't OU's call at all. I think OU, if they had their druthers 2 years ago in 2014, they would have wanted the video to come out so they could get it behind them and they could move forward. Now when it came out, people made the mistake that this situation just happened 2 or 3 weeks ago. But in reality, it happened back in 2014. OU had already punished him. That's why a lot of the comments I heard, especially nationally, I thought were ridiculous. You know, he shouldn't have played in the Sugar Bowl. Well, okay, you're going to let him play for 2 years and you're not going to play him in the Sugar Bowl? I mean, you played him last year in the national championship game. The only difference is the general public saw the video, but OU had already seen the video, and about 50 media guys had already seen the video. So, you know, we'd already come to our conclusions about the penalty and things like that. So I think OU's handled this very well. The one thing I would have changed if I was OU, and maybe they couldn't, because when I brought this up and said, you know, hey, do you guys regret that you did not have him talk to the media? Bob said, that's fair. Mm-hmm. He said, that's a fair statement. He goes, but we were sometimes listening to legal people and everything else, and, you know, and Joe will eventually speak. He wants to speak to the media about this situation, and he did. And I thought his meeting with the media that lasted, what, 25 minutes, I thought it was heartfelt. I thought it was from the heart. I think he means it, because I've gotten to know Joe pretty well, and I do think he resents and is remorseful, and I do think he is sorry about what happened there. And he's just asking people to give him a chance to prove that he's really a good guy and he's a good citizen, and he's been that way ever since that incident happened. Remember, he was just turning 18, and he'd just been on campus for a couple of months. And so, you know, and I like what Bob says, is that if I'm wrong for giving an 18-year-old man that I think does have some character, that I do think is not that person that reacted that night, that I do think is going to be a productive citizen, If I'm wrong for giving that 18-year-old young man a chance, then I'm going to be wrong, and that's just the way it's going to be.
The senior writer with OU Insider, James Hale, has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. We are way over on time, so we've got to run, James. We'll continue this conversation, and we look forward to more in 2017. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Steve. Have a great day.
You bet. Absolutely. Talk soon. Much more coming your way at SB Nation Radio and the Big East Sports Show in hour number two.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Alyssa Walker-Campbell, welcome back inside the Quicken Loans studios at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. It is Wild Card Weekend, and we're going to shine the spotlight right now on a team that has the weekend off, and that is the Dallas Cowboys. We're going to be visiting with the Dallas Morning News reporter, and that is Brad Townsend. Good evening, Brad.
Good evening to you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Brad, of course, is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line. And let's start with the Cowboys. They are 13-3 and the top seed in the NFC playoffs, and the countdown is on for the Super Bowl. I mean, down here, it's less than 1 month away. What is your projections? I mean, are they going to win it all this year in 2017?
Boy, with the Cowboys, I mean, they have not even been to the NFC title game in 21 years.
So hey, you got to dream big.
Right. As great as they've looked on the field, and as great as they look on paper, and as great as they look in terms of injuries right now, they really do have to kind of watch what happens this weekend and just focus solely on that one game. It'll be a week from Sunday and here in Dallas.
Well, I have to wonder, too, you know, Brad, who do you think is going to be the biggest threat and the biggest challenger to the Cowboys making this deep run and ultimately, hopefully, you know, winning it all if you're a Cowboys fan?
Right, right. Well, I think a lot of that will be decided this weekend. If you're a Cowboys fan and if you want the easiest path to the Super Bowl, I think you got to be rooting for an upset of Detroit winning at Seattle, because I think that would give Dallas its quote unquote easier first round opponent. They've already shown that they can not only play well against Detroit, but they beat them handily here just a few weeks ago. But I think, frankly, I think probably what will happen is the Green Bay or New York will win that game. Will be Dallas's opponent, and in the way that Aaron Rodgers is playing, I think I think he and the Packers pose the biggest threat. You're looking at Rodgers in those last seven games or so, throwing 18 touchdowns with no interceptions, and having the cred of winning the Super Bowl in Dallas. By the way, so the Packers have played well in AT&T Stadium. They're on a roll, and I think obviously they pose the biggest threat. And even if Dallas gets past Green Bay, there's a pretty good chance they'll play Seattle. And there's a Seattle team with full of playoff experience, a couple years removed from the Super Bowl.
You're listening to The Voice from the Dallas Morning News. He's a sports reporter. Brad Townsend does an outstanding job. He's joining us for our very first time at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And it's an exciting weekend. It's a wild card weekend. And the good news is the Cowboys, they have that bye, and they'll have an opportunity to rest. So, I mean, you've been over there at practice. I mean, what have they been focusing on?
It's what's really striking to me is it's a genuinely relaxed atmosphere around here. From Jason Garrett, who I think, you know, from a fan point of view, you could probably say he's often uptight. He's very relaxed in press conferences. As the reporters are going down the hall, we're allowed into the locker room for a certain amount of time each day. Mm-hmm. He'll stop and chat with reporters. These are things that you don't typically see Jason Garrett do. And I think, frankly, that's kind of translating down. A lot of times players take the cue from the head coach, even at the professional level. And I think seeing Jason that relaxed probably helps relax the team. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got a pair of rookies here in Dak and Zeke who are very kid-like in everything they do. They play around, throwing candy at each other in the locker room, and you know, some of the older players kind of roll their eyes, but they're laughing about it. And I think it's a loose atmosphere, but a loose atmosphere in a good way, not an overconfident atmosphere. I think this is a team that just knows that they're firing on all cylinders. They've got home field advantage through the playoffs, and if they get to the Super Bowl, they're just going to go right down the highway to Houston. So it's all lined up in their favor.
Brad Townsend of the Dallas Morning News with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. He is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, comparing rates to help you save. Now, that is Progressive. And so as we talk about the Cowboys and Jason Garrett, I mean, it's really been a very special season. He has done a remarkable job. In your opinion, is he the coach of the year?
Well, I mean, he would get my vote. I don't have a vote, but when you look around the NFL, yeah, there's been coaches have done a great job, but when you look at the fact that the Cowboys were 4-12 last year, obviously they had some great personnel additions, but it's not just the fact that Dak and Zeke have taken the NFL by storm this year. It's the fact that when you look at the Cowboys' bigger picture, you got defenses playing much better. With essentially the same personnel, and it's very difficult to rally from a 4-12 record, even if you're playing an easier schedule, because that's what the NFL affords you when you were 4-12, you play an easier schedule the following year. But when you look around the NFL, to go from 4-12 to 13-3 is pretty remarkable.
It absolutely is. So let's talk about their outstanding quarterback in Dak Prescott. How do you think he's going to execute and respond to the pressure in his first playoff game?
Boy, that's the big X factor, I think. I mean, you've seen him in a lot of pressure situations this year that you would think that would sort of rattle a rookie quarterback. He has not. He's been unflappable in virtually every situation. The one exception was the game against New York when Dallas failed to really move the ball on offense. He was not crisp at all that day.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would be one concern if you're a Cowboys fan, is if New York can upset Green Bay this coming weekend, then you've got a Giants team that's beaten the Cowboys twice. I think more than likely they'll end up playing the Packers, but if they play the Giants would have a mental edge of having beaten the Cowboys twice this year. And in terms of Dak, I think that would be a legitimate concern. The Giants obviously figured out a way to play against him.
What about, as we talk about Dak, but what about if you are a Tony Romo fan, what do you think the future is in terms of him? And, you know, there's been so much talk about, you know, his first game back, how he is physically, right, mentally. But I have to wonder, too, I mean, Brad, I mean, I just wonder how emotionally he's doing, because he's playing through a lot of pain. I mean, did he ever envision that he would end up being a backup quarterback?
It's tough to say how he's doing emotionally. Really, what we saw this past Sunday, him coming off the bench and, you know, leading one touchdown drive and throwing a touchdown pass. The biggest thing I saw was the reaction of his teammates, and they obviously still love him. Mm-hmm. They still respect him. You would have thought that he'd thrown a pass to win a playoff game when that happened. And he had a big smile on his face. It's got to be very awkward for him.
Yeah.
I think he's obviously still viewed as a team leader, and yet, here he is. He's very little chance, unless Dak gets hurt, of getting in the game. But if you're a Cowboys fan and you've got a rookie quarterback that's about to go into his first NFL playoff experience, I would think that that's a pretty good ace in the hole to have, even though Tony's really only played that part of one quarter over the last year plus. Just the fact that he got in, I thought that was a great move by the Cowboys to get him some time and get him in for that one drive.
Hey, Brad Townsend with the Dallas Morning News has been with us tonight at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. First time on the show, did a great job. Brad, we look forward to some more conversations in 2017. Thank you so much, and keep up the great work.
All right, thank you so much.
Bye. You bet. Stick around. Much more coming your way right here at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Elissa Walker Campbell, Happy New Year, and welcome back to hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. The stage, it is set, and we are ready for a robust debate and preview of the College Football National Championship and the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Clemson Tigers on Monday night with an 8 o'clock kickoff Eastern Time on ESPN. We have extended an invitation to the voice of the Crimson Tide, and that is the legendary, the great, he's the golden voice of radio. That is Eli Gold, who is in his third decade as the voice of the Tide and has called the action of every Alabama football game since 1989. So impressive. Good evening and congratulations, Eli.
Thank you, ma'am. Good evening to you. Great to be back on with you again.
It's wonderful and an honor. And are you ready for round two as Clemson and Alabama will face each other for the second season in a row?
Yeah, you know, I've got a little more work to do as we arrived earlier today in Tampa. So I've got a little work to do yet, but come Monday evening, we'll be ready to get at it.
Well, now, Alabama, it is a program, obviously, that is rich in tradition. They are in their hunt for their 16th national championship. And I saw somewhere online, my producer and I, we were talking about this earlier, clarified this for us. Clemson hasn't beaten Alabama since 1905. Is that true, Eli?
You know, I think that's correct. You know, the teams first met back in 1900, and Clemson won the first three games. Mm-hmm. I would have to go back and check the exact dates. But, you know, of course, yeah, that's probably true, and it sounds really cool. The teams haven't played very often, so it's, the numbers are kind of skewed. It says, well, you haven't beaten them since 1905 or whatever, but... You know, the teams haven't played very often either.
Okay, so regardless, it is deja vu all over again, Clemson, Alabama. So what are your expectations this year in terms of scoring in the title game?
Well, you know, I personally don't expect we'll see 85 points put up on the board again. But then again, you never know. I mean, you know, that's what Clemson does. They score 40 or more on a regular basis. I'm sure the Alabama defense would like to control things a bit more than they did last year, as they have against everybody else for that matter this year. So, you know, we'll see. I just don't expect it to be quite as high scoring as it was a season ago.
Okay, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide, Eli Gold, is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. Eli is joining us on our Progressive Insurance Celebrity Guest Line, comparing rates to help you save. Now, that is progressive. And we got to talk about this because one of the big headlines has been that Alabama decided to move on from Lane Kiffin prior to the title game. What kind of impact do you think that this might have with the Tide? I mean, and how risky of a move is that?
I think nothing Nick Saban does is risky.
Okay.
Okay, he has thought this out totally. Steve Sarkisian has been with us all year. I personally don't believe that this is going to have any effect whatsoever. You know, there might be a couple of moments of communication where the coach and our quarterback have to, you know, get on the same page, but they've been working together all this week. And like I say, he's been around since the start of the season, though he has not been an on-the-field coach, obviously, by definition as an analyst. But I don't expect it's going to be a factor at all.
Okay, we're getting you set and ready. Alabama, Clemson, Monday night title game. What do you think, Eli, are going to be some of the key matchups that will ultimately decide who is the winner in this game?
Well, you know, the key matchups are going to be to slow down their wide receivers, slow down Gallman, and obviously keep Deshaun Watson in check. But at the same time, Alabama's defense in most games, there have been a couple where the numbers kind of got skewed, but even at that, that's because Bama was up so big that in the third and fourth quarter, they were playing the third and fourth string. But, you know, you got to keep Deshaun Watson in check, as we learned last year. Some of the biggest plays that he makes are on the end of broken plays. Mm-hmm. Something's gone bad. Something's gone wrong. Next thing you know, the guy's taken off for 18 yards and a first down. So you got to keep him in check. But, you know, Alabama's defense clearly is, the best in America, not only statistically, but, you know, in all practical purposes. It's a group of NFLers who are still wearing collegiate jerseys. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the battle in the trenches. These are two very, very, very good teams. Every element is going to have a battle to it before the day is done Monday night.
Alabama defensively, they lead in every major defensive category this season. Do you think, Eli, all the years that you have covered the Crimson Tide, that this is the best Alabama defense that Nick Saban has ever coached? I mean, how does it compare to the 2011 season?
You know, I can't, I'm not smart enough to compare. And I'll tell you why. The game has changed. There were players on that great defense that you talked about in 11 that would not have been on this year's team, not because of their ability, but because of how the game has evolved and as a result, how the athletes have evolved. Terrence Cody, you might remember him, the big guy in the middle who went on to play with the Ravens.
Mm-hmm.
Terrence Cody could only play first and second downs because at that time in football, some teams were starting to transition to that hurry-up, no-huddle offense. He could not play third and fourth down. But you couldn't get him off the field after second down because they were running to the line of scrimmage and snapping the ball so quickly. So the game has evolved. The team in 2011 had a little bit of that hurry-up, no-huddle. They had virtually no run-pass option. Now the RPO is one of the biggest plays in college football. And everybody, even Alabama, is doing the hurry-up, no-huddle. And if you want to compare statistics, well, you know, this Alabama defense now is on the field for 20 plays or more per ball game than was that defense in 2011. So the 11 statistics were better than this year's statistics. But this year's team, you know, played 240 or 80 more snaps.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how to compare all of that. Suffice to say, you're looking at 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, 1E. These are all great defenses.
The rematch is here. Alabama ready to play for the national championship on Monday night. It is such an honor to be going one-on-one with Eli Gold. He is the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. As I mentioned earlier, he has called every Alabama football game since 1989. And I tell you, Eli, I had an opportunity earlier this week to watch an interview with Jonathan Allen, and he talked about how Alabama's defense is perhaps looking to get some redemption in the title game. What has he shared with you? Do you get a sense that they're playing with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder and they really want to go out there and shut things down?
I think they felt, many of the players felt, that they really didn't win and didn't play to their fullest last year. Granted, Alabama did win.
Okay.
But it was 45-40. I mean, you know, you'd have to take three games to add up the 45 points by the opposition. And that's obviously a tribute to Deshaun Watson and a tribute to that entire ball club. But some of these guys were just, they were not pleased with their performance, albeit in a winning effort. Same thing on the offense. Guys like Cam Robinson talking about, you know, that game and last week's game against Washington. Yes, Alabama won, but, you know, he didn't think they did because they didn't play very well. So I don't want to say they have a chip on their shoulder. They just know how good they are, and they want to be able to play to that level against the best quarterback in America.
Mm-hmm.
And against a very elite offense. And that's how all-world athletes challenge themselves. It's not necessarily how they do against that lesser team. It's how they do against the very best teams out there. And the very best team other than Alabama is Clemson. And they just didn't feel that they showed what they could do last year. And at the same time, Clemson is saying the same thing.
Right.
They lost. They went off that field last year, you know, devastated because they felt they played well enough to win but just didn't finish. So they've got that going for them. So these are two teams that desperately want to win the ball game Monday night.
Okay, the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide, Eli Gold, has been with us at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are flat out of time. I want to give a plug for his new book that is out. It was released this fall, Crimson Nation, The Shaping of the South's Most Dominant Football Team. And he presents the readers with a detailed account of more than 90 years of Crimson Tide football. It is awesome, and we look forward to another compelling conversation. Thank you so much, Eli.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Absolutely. Congratulations. And much more coming your way in hour number two at SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Here's your host, Alyssa Walker Campbell.
Hey, Alyssa Walker Campbell, Happy New Year, and welcome back to SB Nation Radio and the Big E Sports Show. In our final segment tonight, you know what? We're going to talk some college basketball. We're going to visit with veteran Maryland beat writer for the Baltimore Sun, and we're going to talk about the Terrapins and his brand new book that is out. He teamed up with Triumph Books, our good friends of the show. It is titled 100 Things Maryland Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, and it is truly the ultimate resource guide for true Maryland fans. It's such a pleasure to have with us tonight. Don Marcus from the Baltimore Sun. Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing great. It's nice to have you on the show for the very first time. And so let's get right to it because the Terrapins, they are off to a very strong start in 2016-2017 season. And why not? They had that impressive run last year, and they certainly look like a Final Four contender. So only two losses so far this season. I mean, what has been your initial impressions?
Well, it's been an interesting year because they had, four guys leave. Two of whom are in the NBA. Jake Lehman with Portland and Diamond Stone with the LA Clippers. And then they had Rashid Suleiman, who's in the D League, and Robert Carter, who's playing in Europe. Mm-hmm. So they really had a transformation of the roster. Melo Trimble came back for his junior year, and now they have three freshmen starting, which is the first time that Mark Turgeon's ever done it, and not too many teams around the country have that many freshmen. So it's been an interesting year. They've certainly their schedule hasn't been the most challenging to date, but they've had a couple of good wins. They beat Oklahoma State, they beat Kansas State in a tournament, and but they're coming off a really tough loss. They blew a 13-point lead in the last 6 minutes and lost to Nebraska at home on New Year's Day. And they had to change their New Year's resolutions, I guess, immediately, because mm-hmm. Now they're going to play at Michigan on Saturday. So that'll be a good test to see how resilient they are.
Well, Don, you're exactly right, because the offseason for Maryland, it was a bit unkind, as you had mentioned, losing four seniors. And each of those guys, you got to remember, I mean, they averaged in double digits in scoring. They were quality players. So out of these freshmen that are starting, I mean, who has really shined the most and provided that offensive support?
Kevin Herter, who was the New York State Mr. Basketball upstate New York last year, 6'7" forward, looks like he should still be in high school. He's pretty young looking, and actually I think he wasn't even 18 when he got on the campus. He had 26 points, career high 26 on Sunday.
Wow.
He was the bright spot for that game, and was ready, really sort of on his way to leading them to win when they collapsed. But he hit 7 threes, which was a freshman record on Sunday. And then Anthony Cowan, not even almost the second point guard. He's really sort of taken a lot of the point guard responsibilities from Melo to free Melo up to be more of a scorer. And Anthony Cowan has done a really good job as a point guard, both scoring. At one point last week, he had the highest rate in the country of getting to the free throw line compared to the number of shots from the field he had taken. I think it was 88 shots from the field and 80 free throws. And so he's a pretty aggressive kid. He's only about 5'11". They list him as 6 feet, maybe even shorter than 5'11".
Mm-hmm.
And then Justin Jackson, who's a 6'7" forward with a 7'3" wingspan from Canada. And he was a top 25 recruit a couple of years ago, committed to UNLV when the UNLV coach got fired. He decommitted and ended up at Maryland. He's been up and down, but he's had some really good moments, had 21 points, I think, against Georgetown early in the year, and has had a couple of good games since. And, but it has struggled at times, has disappeared at times, as freshmen tend to do. But all three have been very, very promising, and you project them later in the season when you think they'll be really ready to be more consistent, and then down the road a year or two from now, where they'll be some of the top players in the Big Ten.
Don, talk to us about head coach Mark Turgeon. I mean, he is in his sixth season at Maryland, and he has led the Terrapins back to national prominence in college basketball, I would say, in a short amount of time. How has he done it?
Well, I think he's done it a lot by recruiting. You know, one of the things, Gary Williams was an unbelievable coach during his 22 years as the Hall of Fame. But he did it with more blue-collar players and maybe finding guys who are not five-star recruits or some of the best talent in the country and coaching and teaching them. You know, Juan Dixon is a perfect example, who's the all-time leading scorer, Gravis Vasquez, who had played, you know, quite a few years in the NBA, now is out with an injury. But, you know, he did it with guys who were sort of under the radar, whereas Mark has done it, especially the last couple of years, now getting, you know, Diamond Stone a couple of years ago, Mello Trimble, you know, 3 years ago, and now these guys this year, who are all top, you know, basically all top 60 recruits. You know, he's done it more with the traditional, or not the traditional, the way that a lot of guys do it. He's not quite getting the one and done. Though Diamond was, but he's getting a lot of good talent from the high school level, from the AAU circuit, and you know, basically building a roster full of these guys who are very talented players.
Okay, Baltimore Sun reporter Don Marcus with us just about another minute at SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. His new book, 100 Things Maryland Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die, it provides you with every essential piece of Terrapins knowledge and trivia that you will need to become the ultimate Terps fan. Tell us about the book.
Well, it was an interesting process. It was the first book I wrote, and it might be the last one because it was a very difficult process.
Yeah.
That I had to do during the season. I will never do that again.
Wow.
But that's just the way it came about. When they came to me, which was right, you know, before the season was going to start, when the deadline was. So I ended up writing, I would say, of the 80,000 words, about 60,000 of them were written after the season was over. So,
wow.
They didn't have much of March Madness, but I had a lot of April, May, and early June Madness.
Very good. Well, it's beautifully written, and it's a wonderful read. We're going to post it on our Twitter tonight. And, Don, we certainly appreciate you coming on for the very first time. And I promise we're going to carve out some more time for you in 2017 as March Madness will be underway before you know it. It's a pleasure to have you with us tonight right here at SB Nation Radio. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
Always a true pleasure to catch up with all of our guests. Be sure and join us each and every Friday night from 8 to 10 Eastern Time. Don't drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at the all-new SB Nation Radio.